Welcome to the Principled Podcast, brought to you by LRN. The Principled Podcast brings together the collective wisdom on ethics, business and compliance, transformative stories of leadership, and inspiring workplace culture. Listen in to discover valuable strategies from our community of business leaders and workplace changemakers.
Hi, we're here back at Principled with Samantha Kellen, the lead ethics analyst with Duke Energy. Samantha, it's great to have you here this afternoon.
Hey, Marcia, thanks for having me. I'm super excited.
Awesome. Well, it's great to be here and to connect with you on your journey into the field of corporate governance, compliance, and ethics. I think you have a fascinating story, and I'd love for you to jump off and start and tell our audience, how did you even get into this field? Like, is this something that you really wanted to pursue?
So honestly, I ended up in compliance and ethics totally by chance. I certainly didn't grow up as a little girl saying that I wanted to be a compliance officer one day. So that's certainly my goal today, and I'm grateful that I ended up here. I actually was in college, needed to take a break. I had some family things going on, and so I went to go pursue my other passion, which was horseback riding at the time. And when I decided that I no longer wanted to do that for employment, I went back to school to finish my undergrad degree. And while I was going to school at night, I found a temp job as the administrative assistant to a compliance officer where I was living in New York at the time. And that was my first introduction. I had no idea what a compliance officer did. He was also general counsel, and I knew a little bit more about that. But, you know, that was really sort of where I learned the nuts and bolts and policies and audits. And he had quality control folks under him and safety folks under him as well. And so that was my initial exposure, and I realized how exciting it was being able to learn about all of the different facets of the operations side of the business and partnering with them to come up with solutions that worked for everyone, right? And really being relied on as an expert and breaking down complex rules and laws and things into terms and situations that folks could understand. All of that really resonated with me, and I really liked being able to help our employees. And so I ended up staying totally by chance, but I'm glad it worked out that way.
Tell me about how you started to kind of evolve your role and growth in your journey in the field.
My initial exposure from that first company and then on to a few after that was really on the regulatory side. Things like filings and public utility commissions and health and human services and that side of the business, and understanding and making sure that we're meeting all of those contractual obligations or legal obligations. And, you know, that was a great introduction to the world of compliance, but there's this whole other side around ethics, right? And that side really interested me. I had begun attending Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics events and was hearing about codes of conduct and all of these things, and the businesses that I was working for at the time didn't have the bandwidth to staff an ethics department. It wasn't their focus, but I really wanted to learn more about that and transition away from strictly is this legal to is this the right thing for us to do for our stakeholders, for our employees. So I pursued an opportunity that gave me the chance to do that and expanded my exposure to those kinds of topics as well.
And it seems like you had really acutely picked up upon a trend that was evolving in the field, which is where historically, you know, two decades ago, compliance was very focused on the blocking and tackling and the policies and the defense, essentially. And it is now, especially just when we look at the way the industry has shifted, it's moved more into, you know, ethical decision-making, being more proactive, really trying to drive engagement, impact, and build corporate culture. So that the blocking and tackling is not defensive, but it's more like, how do we embed ethics and compliance more into the business? So tell me a little bit about, you know, your personal, when I look at kind of the lens in which you see success criteria for a program, one of the things you and I have chatted about in the past is around really humanizing the conversation and the importance of building authentic dialogue, not speaking around policy, but bringing it to life and activating it through behavior. Tell me about, you know, how can organizations really humanize the conversation and engender trust in building corporate culture?
I think one of the foundational skills that we can have as compliance and ethics professionals is around communication and really breaking things down into simple terms, right? If I had to put my personal philosophy into a few words. It would be authentic, as you mentioned, transparent and simple with a splash of humor. That's sort of how I go about my daily activities. And being able to communicate effectively with the partners that you're working with really goes a long way to building that trust. And that, again, transparency helps there as well. Because if you can say, look, these are the guidelines that we have in place, whether they're from a regulator or they're our own internal guidelines. This is what we're working with, but you're the expert, right? I'll break down what the rules say, but you're the expert on how your business works. You know the operations side better than I do. So let's partner together, combine our expertise, and come up with a solution that's mutually beneficial, right? That works for both of us, that meets our obligations, but also allows you to continue to do business and generate revenue. If there's no revenue, I don't have a job either, right? So it's in both of our interests to make sure that the business is coming along and functioning. Humanizing and being available and advertising what we do as humans, right? We're not the cops. We're not the police. We're not the no department. I have a good friend, Richard Bistrong, who likes to refer to compliance and ethics as the bonus prevention department, which I giggle at all the time too, right? Because it's such an accurate depiction of what folks out in the business have said over the years. And so I try to be really approachable, right? I'm not going to shut you down every time. I'm not going to say no every time. I'm not going to dismiss your concerns. I want to be approachable because if we're involved in conversations on the front end, right, that seat at the table that we always talk about, if we're approachable and willing and easy to work with, then folks will involve us on the front end. And it's so much easier to get involved in business decisions on the front end rather than have to adjust or pivot on the back end, deal with issues or, you know, worst comes to work, investigate an allegation. And so I try to just be real and be a human and be available so that folks will come and talk to me when they've got a question.
You know, many want to turn the corner and extend more trust and say, look, we're providing the tools and resources and we want to entrust you to make the right choices. But how do you really scale that? There's kind of this notion as, you know, we want you to show up as corporate citizens and we want you to really build culture, and culture is truly the outcome of compliance and ethics. But how can an organization scale that, especially when we're dealing with large global footprints and local business nuances? What is your guidance there?
So I think I would say, just as you mentioned, about moving away from, you know, here's the bare minimum compliance obligation, to shifting the conversation around values. Does this line up with our values and who we want to be as an organization? You're totally right that our consumers in this day and age want to do business with good corporate citizens, right? There's research that suggests that. And when you can frame the ethics and compliance conversation in those terms, as in it's good for business, I think it's a much more palatable suggestion for your employees to comprehend. And I think it really also goes down to empowering them with the tools and resources they need in the moment rather than training them to death one time a year, right? I always tell our employees when I'm having conversations about our code of conduct that I can't create a code for you that will address every possible situation you could face in your day-to-day business activities. It would be really, really long. It would need to be updated all the time. And quite frankly, I'm just not that creative, right? Like, I just don't know all of the situations that you could possibly face. And so we need to provide them with those in the moment, easy to access tools so that if they're faced with a challenge, they can reach out and get guidance, or they can refer to some other document, or they can pull up an ethical decision tree that will help them process their thoughts as they're considering what to do next. And as you mentioned, you know, foster that trust, you know, empower them to go forth and make decisions and deal with the consequences sometimes as they arise, right? I think we've talked previously about the concept of trust and, you know, we trust you to fail, you know, that ability to pivot quickly, to learn from our mistakes and move forward. If innovation and creativity is stifled to such a point that employees are afraid to make any decision, then that's not good for anyone either. And so we also talk about culture as being how things get done around here, right? Our culture isn't what we have written down on paper, it's what really happens. And I truly believe that if leaders are talking about integrity and compliance or ethics and compliance regularly, if they're involving their employees in the business decisions and say, here's why we made this decision, then they're much more likely to embed those concepts in their processes as well. I consider employee and leader relationships much like children and adult relationships, right? Your kids are always watching what the parents are doing. And if the leader is doing the next right thing and is talking about ethics and compliance and making it a priority, then the employees understand that that's what's expected of them. And so if you can cascade that down, I think it's really effective.
No, you're spot on. I mean, the research reinforces and supports what you're saying. There's a ton of research around the influence of the direct supervisor or line manager. But a lot of companies struggle with, well, how do we get our middle managers to have these difficult conversations? And secondly, do we want them having these conversations? There's a tendency in some companies, and it could be due to legacy and culture, that they're more comfortable controlling or managing those conversations through HR and legal and compliance. How can we guide companies to take that leap of faith and that risk and say, no, it's actually more scalable and more influential in building culture to empower middle management to have these kind of kitchen table conversations?
That's a great question. You know, my experience has shown that employees are much more receptive to messages that come from their middle managers or their direct supervisors than they are from any corporate communications channel we could use, right? Whether it's your digital signage or an email from the CEO, it matters more when it comes from their supervisor. And so I've heard similar feedback from supervisors that say, you know, I'll talk about ethics. I just don't know what to say. The conversations themselves have this stigma around them that if we're talking about ethics, it must be because we did something wrong. So moving away from that, you know, well, we only talk about it when there's a problem, to more frequent conversations, I think helps to reduce that stigma as well. And so I always try to provide managers with those resources that make talking about ethics easy. So, for example, we have an executive bulletin that we'll produce for our top 100 leaders that will basically summarize a case study about some company that ran into trouble somewhere. And we'll say, this is what it could look like here. And here are the steps that you need to take as a leader to ensure it doesn't, basically. And then with that, we provide them a one-page, what we call a values moment, which is basically three questions and answers that they can use to facilitate a conversation with their team. And the expectation is that they cascade that down throughout their organization. So if you're feeding them things that will help them have those conversations, it's so much easier for them. One of the most brilliant ideas I thought, and it's super simple, that I've heard over the years is where there are questions around ethics and integrity built into the annual performance conversations. GE had that built in a few years ago, and they provided the managers with a guide that said, do you have any concerns? Have you seen anything that you haven't reported that you're uncomfortable with? Just sort of, let's have a quick conversation about this while we're here. And then every manager knows that at least once a year they've got to sit down and have that conversation with their employee. So if you can provide some more structure and some more resources, it's easier to scale that out for a bigger organization.
You know, as we look ahead, I mean, you've had a tremendous, I would say, journey going into the corridors of how compliance and ethics is transforming. How do you forecast, I don't know if you're a crystal ball here, but how do you forecast kind of some of the challenges and opportunities as we look ahead? What are some of the top priorities you think compliance and ethics practitioners should be focusing on?
Well, I think some of the most important conversations that I'm interested in looking towards the future are around effectiveness. And I don't think it's necessarily brand new or original, but I think it's still one of those things that we don't necessarily know how to do successfully, right? We are moving on that continuum away from a check-the-box program or a program that looks good on paper to actually being able to prove that it's really working. And so what does that look like? It may be quantitative metrics around, did you get 100% of your employees to take your training? But even better yet, did your training actually change the way your employees are behaving? And measuring whether the messages that you're sending out through your communication channels are actually making it to the front lines of your employees. And proving that our work has value, rather than just preventing fines or avoiding litigation, are we bringing value day to day on an ongoing basis? And so I'm always interested to hear how companies are finding both quantitative and qualitative measurements that they can use to determine whether their programs are working. And then, of course, there are all those other sort of technology topics that are out there, like artificial intelligence and how that's going to affect what we do. Are companies involving their compliance and ethics teams in those technology adaptations to make sure that they're questioning, is this the right thing to do? Some of the keynote sessions that we've had at some of the conferences recently have been around those things, and my brain doesn't even necessarily comprehend all of the impact to those big technology advancements that are coming. And so if we can be involved in them, again, on the front end, I think we can help steer our companies in the right direction overall. So, yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing your afternoon with us here on Principled.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. The Principled Podcast is brought to you by LRN. At LRN, our mission is to inspire principled performance in global organizations by helping them foster winning, ethical cultures rooted in sustainable values. Please visit us at LRN.com to learn more. And if you enjoyed this episode, subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen. And don't forget to leave us a review.